we asked Harvey Shapiro to talk about the poets of World War II and to read some brief selections from their work. Harvey Shapiro is a World War II veteran. He served in the Army Air Force and flew 35 combat missions over Central Europe. He's also the author of 11 books of poetry, to which he recently added his edited collection, Poets of World War II. In describing this book, Shapiro commented, "This is not a book of celebration, unless it is to celebrate man's ability, indeed his compulsion, to turn terror into art."
World War II marked the beginning of the American century, as Henry Luce called it, in the title of a book published in 1941. Toward the end of the war, Walter Lippmann wrote, "What Rome was to the ancient world, what Great Britain has been to the modern world, America is to be to the world of tomorrow." With the collapse of the Soviet Union, we seem for the first time to be strenuously caught in the drama of that American century. I believe that is why there is such interest today in World War II as a turning point in our history and in the men and women who participated in it. We learn about the past from our professional historians, but also from our novelists and poets. The novelists of World War II, Mailer, Vonnegut, Styron, Wook, Jones, James Jones, are well known. The poets are mostly unknown. It is their testimony I want to examine now. They are unknown because they have been so overshadowed by the English poets of World War I, Wilfred Owen, Siegfried Sassoon, Robert Graves, Edmund Blunden, Isaac Rosenberg. In his classic anthology, Up the Line to Death, The War Poets, 1914-1918, the English historian Brian Gardner singled out as a defining characteristic of these English poets their sense of themselves as a brotherhood. Even before the war, according to Gardner, they thought themselves a generation marked off for great things, and afterwards they remained a brotherhood of those who were there. There is no such feeling among the American poets of World War II. But of course, the English poets, officers all, belonged in a sense, with the exception of Rosenberg, to the same gentleman's club. The American poets, many of them enlisted men, did not. Even after the savage battles of the Somme, when the tenor of their poetry changed, the English poets continued to celebrate the glory of their brotherhood. For the most part, the American poets write in quite a different tone. Their poems are often bawdy, bitchy, irreverent. They do not glory in brotherhood, and they do not, as a rule, find nobility in one another. Quite the contrary, they often dislike being put cheek by jowl alongside one another. If they are enlisted men in the infantry, they bear no love for their officers. Surprisingly, even those men in bomber crews, which were, after all, small, intensely coordinated units, could feel alien from one another. Nor do these poets sound the kind of sonorous note exemplified by John McCrae's In Flanders Fields, the single poem from the First World War that everyone involved in the Second had grown up with. "To you from falling hands we throw, the torch be yours to hold it high." Or by Rupert Brooke's The Soldier, "If I should die, think only this of me, that there's some corner of a foreign field that is forever England." The American poets of World War II wrote poems that are neither pious nor patriotic. They viewed themselves as individuals caught in a giant machine that was so complex and far-flung, the mind could not encompass it. They were astonished at the way their lives had been altered. The way trench warfare dominates the imagery of World War I, the fleets of bombers and the smoking cities dominate the imagery of World War II. Out of that new war in the air, a clean war, as one of the poets says, because the dead rarely bothered coming home to die, came the most famous poem of the conflict, The Death of the Ball Turret Gunner by Randall Jarrell. Jarrell enlisted in the Air Corps in 1942, but washed out of pilot training and became an instructor trainer at a field in Tucson, Arizona, for the rest of the war. When I first read the concluding line of his famous poem, "When I died, they washed me out of the turret with a hose," I remembered an incident from my aerial gunnery school training in Yuma, Arizona. An instructor returned from flying his missions over Germany with the English-based 8th Air Force was standing before a mock-up of a B-17 explaining the different positions. When he came to the ball turret, he said offhandedly, Sometimes, when they return from a mission, they have to wash him out of the turret with a hose. Jarrell may well have heard that line delivered just the way I did, and then he put it to great use. The civilian poets, who are too old to serve, greet the war without enthusiasm, and that's a reflection of the climate of opinion that preceded Pearl Harbor and our entry into it. Most Americans were wary of getting involved in what they perceived to be a power struggle among Europeans. Some of these poets write about segregation in the American Army. The Army during World War II was completely segregated in a system that was as rigid and bizarre as segregation in the American South. One example, I was a gunner in an all-white B-17 crew flying out of southern Italy. All the combat crewmen in my bomb group were white. Yet frequently over our targets in Germany, we were protected by black pilots from an all-black P-51 fighter group, also stationed in southern Italy. We met only in the air. We were victorious, but 400,000 of us died in that war. So the sight of dead bodies is scattered among the poems of the American poets, the way bodies were washed up on invasion beaches or left as markers along the trail to show the new infantrymen moving forward, the face of death.
You've been listening to Harvey Shapiro, veteran and poet, and the editor of Poets of World War II, published by the Library of America.